Welcome to All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio in partnership with Showtime.
Welcome back. Season 3 of All the Motherfucking Smoke. Jack, what's up with you?
My brother, what's going on out there in L.A., man?
Man, I can't call it. You know what I mean? I had to wait for the nanny to get here so Ash wasn't burning the house down before we jumped on this interview with our brother right here. But, man,
shout
all
out
is
Ash.
Well.
You got to give yeah, Ash know. A shout out every time.
Yeah, Ash is crazy, man. Running the house at 2 years old, but he looks like he's 5. Man, we got a special guest, a great guest. Someone who shit on our 2007 dreams of going to the finals.
Yep.
But someone I've always been a real big fan of, man. Huge game, very underrated to me. Just went about his business in a cold way. Welcome to the show, Darren Williams, man. What's up with you?
Man, I'm chilling, boys. I appreciate y'all having me on.
My boy, man, what's
thank
good,
you for
D?
Having.
Man, I can't complain.
What's life been like, man, since you've been retired? I see your beautiful family. I follow you on Instagram all the time. You, super daddy duty, great husband. What's life been like since you stopped dribbling that ball?
Well, shit, a lot. first couple years, it was kind of just figuring out what the hell was next, you know? I didn't really want to, you know, jump into coaching. I needed a break from that travel, that lifestyle. Plus, I had, you know, my kids are a little older, so I wanted to be able to spend time with them. I got a daughter that's, she's off in college now. Got another one that's playing volleyball in high school and doing the club circuit. So I wanted to, you know, be able to spend time with them and see them, you know, grow up. And so kind of that's what, you know, consumes a lot of my time now. I was playing a lot of golf, but kind of took a step back from that lately.
You finished playing in what year? 16, 15?
17.
You and I finished the same year. What was that? I mean, it wasn't really like I need to hurry up and do something, but how long did it kind of take you to kind of find your rhythm? Because you got to think, we've been hooping our whole entire lives. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
now you're mid-30s, you're early 30s for you, and now you still got more than half your life ahead of you. What was that time like? Was it stressful? Was it boring? Was it fun? What was it like for you?
Yeah, well, I'm 37 now, actually. So I'm headed to the 40s with you boys.
Yeah, we waiting on you.
honestly, the first year, you know, it was kind of one of the things where I was like, "Do I still want to play? Do I not?" And I kind of just started traveling. So, you know, I was skiing a bunch. So I picked up skiing because it's something I couldn't do when I was playing, but I always, something I always wanted to try. You know, I was golfing a lot, kind of just staying busy like that, you know, kids as well. And there's only so much of that stuff you can do where you start,
you start
feeling like you're a bum. You ain't, what's, you know, what, is this what my life is about? You know, like you said, it's, you know, we woke up every day with a purpose, with a passion.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they try to tell you in all the meetings, all the NBA meetings, about how one day you're going to wake up and it's going to be over. Mm,
right.
And so, you know, after about 2 years of that, I was just like, man, I gotta do something. I can't just, this all this idle time and, you know, your mind starts wandering, starts, you know, doing crazy things on you. Then I was going through a divorce at the time. So all that, you know, kind of started, you know, creeping in my mind, it started weighing on you, and I was like, man, I got to find something to do. And I had done a couple spec homes, you know, some house building, and all the moving I've done and living in houses, I started to, you know, develop a love for architecture and interior design. And so I was like, man, it's what I love to do. It's kind of, you know, what I want to do. And so, you know, I've started, you know, starting building some spec homes out here in Dallas.
That's dope. Parkersburg, West Virginia. Tell us about your upbringing.
I was born in Parkersburg, West Virginia, lived in Williamstown till I was about 4 years old, almost 5. And then I moved to Texas. My mom moved me to Texas. My aunt was out here living. And so, you know, I didn't spend too much time, you know, living full time in West Virginia. But I did go back every summer to stay with my grandparents and spend time with them up until like seventh grade, till, you know, you reach that age where you're like, oh, I just want to be around my friends. But West Virginia was fun. It was different. You know, I was the only person of my color in that town. It was a town of about 3,000. So I used to get a lot of looks, a lot of little comments that at the time I didn't really understand.
Right.
Until I got older. Mm-hmm. You know, I definitely enjoyed my time there.
Are you just light skinned or are you biracial?
My mom's white, dad's black.
Okay, yeah, same with me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You was involved with wrestling growing up. How could you describe your younger self and what other sports you was in besides basketball and wrestling?
Man, I grew up playing everything. You know, I was just one of them kids where I just wanted to whatever the sport was that season, whatever my friends was doing, I was going to do it, and I was 100% in, and it didn't matter. And yeah, wrestling and soccer were actually my first two sports. Mm. And I didn't even really play organized, you know, team basketball till I think fourth grade. You know, wrestling actually is my first sport. My mom, I guess my uncle wrestled in high school, college, and in the Army. And so she just, I don't know, she randomly just asked me if I wanted to wrestle. And I was like, all right, I'll try it. I mean, I was four, so I don't remember it. But she tells me the story. And she's like, so you went to practice and you went out there in your first match. And she said, I had to drag you out there because you was crying. Like, you didn't want to go out. And she had to do that every match the whole season because she was, you know, we didn't have no money. So she was like, I paid for this. I signed you up.
Yeah,
paid for this.
Yeah, you don't play for it, right?
Exactly. And so every match, she said, that whole year, I went out, cried on the way out, went out there, got whooped, pent real quick, and left. And so the next summer, she comes back, and she's like, she asked me if I wanted to do it again, and she's expecting me to instantly say no. And for some reason, I said yes. And she said, like, halfway through the year, it was the same thing. And she's like, here we go again. And every match, crying. And then I guess something about halfway through flipped. I was sick of getting whooped and going home crying. So I kind of flipped the switch and went the other way.
Dope.
You know, I'm a Texas boy myself. You know what I'm saying? Speak on being from Texas and being from Texas. Who did you model your game after?
Sure, I had a lot of guys I feel like I looked up to. I watched a lot of basketball, a lot of college basketball, and so a lot of NBA. And I kind of just tried to model my game after a lot of people. You know, I guess I consider myself a student of the game at the time. And you know, J. Kidd was a big influence on me. Gary Payton, a lot of the bigger guards. You know, a lot of the bigger guards is, you know, when you're kind of the same size as them, and that's the trend at the time. That's who you're gonna watch and try to emulate. But man, I was a fan of AI. I mean, who didn't want to have a crossover like AI? I watched Starberry. I watched Stevie Franchise. Man, I even watched guys like Sam Cassell, you know, Baron Davis, you know, y'all's brother. We did, but you know, before that, I was a fan. I mean, I wore five in high school, and him and J. Kidd was a big reason. You know, I didn't have the athleticism BD did, but I was, you know, I was a little sneaky.
You definitely got it off.
Yeah.
So, high school star, you end up choosing Illinois. Was there anyone else you seriously considered before picking there?
Yeah, I mean, my situation was a little crazy because I had kind of had like a top four. It was Illinois was kind of number one, but D. Brown had already committed there, and I'm like, why y'all still recruiting me? And y'all got this little point guard who's ranked ahead of me. I never seen him play, but he was ranked ahead of me. I'm like, I'm not a two guard. I'm a point guard. So I'm like, I don't know. Georgia Tech, Tennessee, and Maryland were my top four, and so I was set to go on my my visits. And the day before I was supposed, or the week I was supposed to go to Illinois, 9/11 happened. And so that set everything back. And I had, I don't know how many months I had to wait before I could take a visit. But in that time when I was waiting, the week before I was supposed to go to Tennessee for my visit, C.J. Watson committed to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And then the day before I was supposed to go, or the day I was supposed to go to Georgia Tech, Jarrett Jack committed. And then Maryland called me and was like, I had never met Gary Williams except for like at a tournament, like saying hi. And they told me he wasn't even gonna be on my visit. And I was like, well, I ain't gonna go nowhere where the coach ain't gonna be on the visit. I ain't met him. And Steve Blake was already there. So it was kind of like a process of elimination, but at the same time, Illinois was kind of my top school anyway, so it worked out. Mm-hmm.
So you started with Bill Self there, right? Was that your first year?
Yeah, Bill Self, and then he left after freshman.
Bruce Weber came in and really helped you develop your game. Alongside playing with D. Brown and Luther Head, you guys had a good young squad because I was finishing up right when you got into college, so I remember you guys. What were some of your biggest takeaways from Coach Weber and then being able to play with two future pros in D. Brown and Luther Head?
Yeah, honestly, I was pretty damn close to transferring after my freshman year, after Coach Self left, because he was a big reason I went there. Mm-hmm. Him and Billy Gillespie, and Billy Gillespie had took his first head job, you know, before my freshman year, and then Coach Self left, and then Bruce Weber came in, and I didn't really know much about him, and nobody really did at the time, and then Coach Weber, love him to death, you know, still talk to him all the time, but he's a little goofy, and so if you don't, if you don't know him, it's hard to understand him, you know, hard to see where he's coming from as a coach, as a person. So it took me a little bit of time, and I was pretty damn close to transferring. But I'm honestly glad I didn't, you know. I'm very grateful for both coaches, but really Coach Weber, because he definitely helped me flourish, and his offense was kind of built for me and kind of, you know, helped me prepare for the NBA. We ran a motion with a lot of pick and rolls. Which at the time, I don't think a lot of college teams were doing. And so it helped me learn spacing, learn the pick and roll game really well, and then learning how to move without the ball, which definitely came in handy when I got to Utah and playing in Jerry Sloan's system.
Junior year, you lead your team to the national championship game, but fall short to North Carolina and Raymond Felton. What do you remember about your junior year and then that national championship game?
Yeah, I mean, it was a crazy year. We finished that sophomore year. Like I said, we had a rough first half of the year. I think just we were all adjusting to a new system, new coach. But we closed out that last half of the season pretty strong, won the Big Ten championship, and then, you know, had a pretty successful run, lost to Duke in the Sweet 16. And so we kind of just built on that momentum, you know, going into the next season and started off, you know, hot. About as hot as you can, you know, didn't lose until the last game of the regular season. And I had always had hopes of playing in the NBA and you know, I felt like I was good enough, but I was never one of those guys that was, even in high school, I wasn't, you know, highly touted. I wasn't McDonald's. I wasn't, you know, for most of the part, I wasn't even top 50 besides a couple little rankings. And so I believed in myself, but I wasn't seeing, you know, my name on the draft boards. I wasn't seeing any of that stuff. And that season, you know, as we kept winning, you could just see my name just kind of slowly showing up. It showed up on second round and would show up on, you know, late first round. And then all of a sudden we get to the Elite Eight, and I had that big game against Arizona, having to come back against them, and made it to the Final Four in the championship game. And my name just kept climbing. And just honestly happens so fast, because that season, you know, I feel like that season blew by. And we get to that national championship game and fall short to they were a stacked team. So
who else was on that team?
Man, it was
that Sean
was
May and
Ray
that
Felton. Yep. Sean May, Ray Felton, Rashad McCants, Jawad Williams, Marvin Williams he was second pick in the draft, and he came off the bench. They were stacked. They had a good squad, and you know, I still think we could have beat them, but you know, they were the better team that night for sure.
But you were one of those rare players, and it's funny how you kind of just explained the same way. Like, you were at your best in the NBA. You know what I mean? Sometimes people are at their best in college, and that's kind of the best of you, but like the best of you was yet to come, which I think is dope, because you obviously became a star in the NBA. But go ahead, Jack.
You declared for the NBA in 2005 after that season. What was that thought process like? After that season, after losing,
I had a little bit of thought about maybe coming back, just because I felt like, you know, we could still be really good. But it's hard when you're, my mom at the time, she had lost her job. I had a child that I had my freshman year. She was about to be two. And you see that, you know, you're guaranteed top 10.
Go get that
it,
money.
It was kind of a no-brainer for me at the times. Yeah, I had to go get that money. And so, you know, if it was like it is now where these kids is getting paid and, you know, you can get some endorsements, it might have been different. But at the time, you know, my stock was at an all-time high. You know, nobody expected me to be a top five pick. And so, you know, I had to strike while I was hot.
So the Utah Jazz select you third. CP3's in that draft class, as you mentioned. Marvin Williams went right before you. Any memorable things happen draft nights, crazy stories, anything you haven't told nobody?
Not really. I mean, I had worked out. I didn't work out for Milwaukee. I think that Andrew Bogut was pretty much a lock at number one. Worked out for Atlanta. I thought I had a really good workout, and they needed a point guard at the time because they had, like, three small forward, power forward type players already. You know, I had y'all's brother Al, Josh Childress. They had Josh Smith, and then they ended up picking up Marvin. But you know, I knew it was either them, Utah, or Charlotte, or New Orleans or Charlotte, because I worked out for all those teams that were, you know, two through five. But nothing really stood out. You know, I didn't know. I knew CP was more highly regarded than me, and so I figured he might go before me. But I knew Utah was kind of big on my size and having a bigger point guard.
Mm-hmm. So Salt Lake City, Utah. What is that like for you? As what are you, 19 or 20 at this point?
I had just turned 21 2 days before the draft.
So what was that like? Culture shock, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it was different. I mean, but. I feel like I can live anywhere. I mean, I lived in Champaign, Illinois. It's nothing but cornfields out there, you know. And I had a you know, girlfriend at the time who ended up being my wife. You know, one baby and another one on the way. So I think it was kind of good for me. You know, that you didn't have that Atlanta nightlife,
man.
You know, facts. Things like that. It helps you, you know, stay more focused, you know. And so
I see you were like Stack and you were allergic to condoms at a young age, huh?
Yeah, you can say that. I had four before I was 26.
You had four kids before you're 20. Damn, but, Jack, he might be fucking with you, Jack.
All with one woman, though. And that's
then you,
key.
Hey, you, but the, well, then you definitely hey, you definitely got him beat then. Because
he's not even my category. Yeah, he's not even my category.
So what was your rookie experience like? Who were some of the vets you had on that squad?
So I had like my vets was Milt Palacio. He was probably one that helped me the most my rookie year, kind of took me under his wing. And then I had Matt Harprin, Greg Ostertag, and then, you know, Booze and AK and Memo were kind of vets, but they were still, you know, they were like fourth year in. We had a pretty young team besides, you know, Matt Harprin and Ostertag. So we were ready to rock.
What was that system like? And obviously a legendary coach like Jerry Sloan, how hard was it to, was it a tough transition to kind of fit in, or did you kind of fit in seamlessly?
No, I feel like I fit in pretty seamlessly. You know, the hardest thing was with Coach Sloan was he was one of those coaches that, you know, he was super old school, so he wasn't just going to start a rookie.
Right.
Just because, you know, he's picked third, you know. I remember to start the season, Keith McLeod was a starting point guard, and Milt and me kind of rotated in. I would play a lot with Milt, 1-2. But, I mean, the first half of the season, I was pretty much playing second and fourth quarters. That's it, just 24 minutes, second, fourth quarter. So I would end the game, but I wasn't starting. And it still bothered me because I knew I was the best point guard. I knew I was the best option. But, you know, that's Coach Sloan. He wants to make you earn it. And I went through a lot of ups and downs that season, a lot of frustrations, even a point where I was kind of – I wasn't playing well. I wasn't playing a lot. It's like one game I play the whole game. I play 48 minutes. And then the next game I play eight. And it's just I wouldn't know. And I think it's not – I won't say it's him fucking with me, but, it kind of was. And I think that's what he wanted to see, how you would react, how you'd respond.
That mental.
You know, yeah. And at the time, you don't know this. You're 21 years old. You're just like, man, fuck this, you know. Mm-hmm. This is some bullshit. But when you look back on it, you know what – you see what he's doing. He's trying to, you know, see what your character is, see how you're going to respond. And I had to. At one point, I think it was like All-Star break. I didn't know if I was going to play. I didn't know if I was going to play the one. I was going to play the two. And I took All-Star break, and I was like, man, you know what? When you come back, you just got to, no matter what you do, you just got to go out there and play hard, because that's what he wants. He just wants you to play hard. Practice. It was practice. I was competing like it was a game. I was going to treat that like it was a game. Shoot around. We had to tape for shoot around. I was going to treat that like a game.
Oh, yeah. You had one of those, huh? Tape shoot arounds?
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
I heard that shit with Stan. That's that old school shit.
Yeah. And so it took I think 5 games after All-Star break where I was just going hard. And then he ended up starting me, and I started the rest of the season. We missed the playoffs by one game. We're 41-41. I think we missed by one or two games, which I believe we could have made up if I would have started from the beginning. But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
What was kind of like your – did you have like an awe moment your first year playing anybody that you kind of idolized or look up to?
My first game.
Who'd you
first
play?
Game of the season, J. Kidd.
Oh, shit. Okay, that's dope.
Yeah, I played J. Kidd. I had 18. Yeah. I felt like I was on top of the world after that game. You know, I was like, I held my own in 24 minutes. So, I think that definitely helped my confidence. I always knew that I belonged, I think, from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. As you said, you kind of in and out, up and down, but you're still able to make first-team all-rookie next to Chris Paul, only one to receive Rookie of the Year votes. Was that he's not really a surprise because you knew you had it in you, but the fact that it was kind of an up-and-down first half, you were still able to make all-team rookie, was that a surprise to you?
No, I mean, I knew I was first team, but I don't think I deserved to vote for Rookie of the Year. I think CP definitely had that. You know, he you know, was kind of given the keys to the ship right away, and played really well. So my lone vote was Ron Boone, which he, you know, he was TV for the Jazz. So shout out Boone for that vote. For that vote, but I don't think I deserved it.
One thing about it, as much as I dislike playing in Utah and being in Utah, Coach Sloan loved me, bro. He tried to get me out there a couple of times. And one thing, I think the reason why he liked me because I was able to thrive in that Pop system. And him and Pop are very similar with their coaching tactics. Like, they'll do a lot of things to you as young players just to see how you're going to react. They already know how you're going to react and what your response going to be, but they'll still put you through it just to see how you're going to respond. So that's one thing I respected about him, because he was a tough-minded coach. As long as you play hard, you got his respect. CP, I had a short stint with the Clippers, but during that short stint, we played y'all. And for some reason, me, you know, I've always been a fan of you. Like, me and you talked during my career, during your career, talked about playing together, D-Will. So, but I know, for some reason, it seemed like you and CP had a battle to see who can cross each other over the most. So that game I played for the Clippers, we played in Brooklyn, bro. You and CP, the first quarter, must have crossed each other over about 10 times a piece in these pick and rolls, bro. What was it with you and CP, bro? Was it just the competitiveness? But it just seemed like y'all was trying to cross each other over the whole game.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I tried to cross everybody over, Stat. You know that. I mean, it didn't matter. It didn't matter who it was.
Both ways, right.
But
left.
I think the CP thing was a friendly rivalry because we had known each other since college, and we played each other in college. They were number one at the beginning of that season, or my junior year when we both left, and we ended up blowing them out. And neither one of us really had good games, but I feel like that's kind of where the rivalry started right there. And then I think going going 3 and 4 in the draft, one after each other, and we were always mm-hmm. linked to each other, you know, throughout the media. You know, they would always bring it up every game. And so, mm-hmm. you know, it was definitely and we were, you know, two of the up-and-coming point guards in the league. So I used to get up for that game for sure. I mean, I get up for all the great point guards, but definitely, you know, against CP, because you had to, or you're going to get embarrassed.
Jack, I think yeah. I remember that game, too, where he actually crossed someone over and had the audacity to try to dunk on Blake and Ryan Hollins, and Blake caught that mm-hmm. shit with his armpit. Remember that, D?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, bro. Hey, listen, bro.
but if I would have made it.
Hey, that would have been crazy, because you were chest-to-chest with 6'11 and 7'1".
But when I look back, yeah, I should have tried to up and under a scoop or something.
Yeah, that shit was funny. Nah, I like that. You went hard, like, fuck it. I'm going to try to dunk this bitch.
You was in a Western Conference, too. So
yeah.
what other matchups you look forward to? You know, you had the Lakers, you had the Spurs, you had, you know, the Mavericks. What other matchups you look forward to besides CP?
I always like to play Dallas, and I always like to play at home because, you know, I'm from Dallas. So,
yeah.
That was always fun to go home and play in front of my family and friends. Definitely love playing against San Antonio just because they were always the best, you know. Mm-hmm. And TP brought the best out of you. And just that system, you had to be locked in to play against the Spurs or you're going to get embarrassed because they were just a well-oiled machine. Definitely like playing against y'all. The Bay, honestly, that's one of the craziest arenas to play in when I was playing. At Oracle, y'all's fans, they had to come up and put, they put security by my mom in the playoffs because my mom's crazy too. She be talking, and she don't like nobody talking about
their
me.
Baby.
So if she,
right. yeah, baby. Yeah, yeah, we right. know that.
Come on, man.
So and my mom whistled. She got that loud whistle where you know blow with your fingers, mm-hmm. and she was doing that in the game. And so then this other dude starts whistling in her ear, like all close. So she calls up the ushers, and she's explaining what's happening. And the usher basically ain't care, called another usher down, told her to stop. She needed to stop whistling, and then stood behind her and was whistling in her ear.
That's some bad shit. That's some bad shit.
And this during the Western semis that this happened. But, man, it honestly, like, I feel like when I was playing, every night was a tough matchup at my position. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had the Suns, you had Steve Nash, you know, AI had come over in Denver, and before that, it was Chauncey, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. And so it was just, I mean, every night was a battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you helped end a 3-year drought, make the playoffs the 2006-2007 season. What was that first round battle like with Houston?
Man, it was crazy, honestly. Nobody expected us to win that.
They had T-Mac. They had Mac then,
T-Mac,
right?
And Yao. T-Mac, they had Yao.
Yeah.
Ray for Austin, Bonzi yeah. Wells.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody expected us to win that. But, you know, we took them to game 7 and on the road and won down in Houston.
Big.
And so, yeah, that definitely. I think that whole season was, you know, was a big confidence booster for me because that's where I kind of started gaining notoriety around the league and in the media. But I think that playoffs is what kind of gave me my confidence, like that superstar confidence where you feel like you're the best player on the court no matter who you play.
Mm-hmm. And you was definitely playing like it. So second round. Sure. We do the unthinkable and able to beat Dallas to meet you guys in the second round. You guys beat us 4-2? You guys beat us?
4-2, yeah.
But I'm not going to lie. I really felt like we got cheated by the refs in game 1 and game 2 with all the motherfucking home cookie foul calls.
Hold up, man. Nah, I would say we got cheated in game 2, but game
was
1, we missed some free throws. Game 1,
oh,
we
yeah,
beat
yeah, okay. game beating was Jay Rich missed free throws. Yeah, game 2. No, but it was, to me, I mean, and Jack and I still talk about this. I mean, your guys' crowd was crazy, sometimes crossed the line, but at the same time, we loved it because, like you said, the bullshit that you face at Oracle, like, as players, we thrive in that. Like, we love that yeah. kind of negative energy towards us because it only gets us going more. But your guys' crowd was wild. Them Mormons were out there acting up, boy.
That's what I hear, man. So I never heard anything racial or anything like that.
Oh yeah, they was out there.
That's what I heard from everybody. So it's not like it's just one or two players said this. Mm-hmm. I done heard it from everybody. They're like, man, y'all fans be saying whatever mm-hmm. to us.
For real.
But yeah, they were crazy. I mean, I remember our crowd was always great throughout the whole mm-hmm. season. Honestly, it was amazing. But that my first playoff game that I ever played in Utah, when I ran out, I got chills on how loud it was. Because I wasn't expecting. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole arena was already filled, and it was ready. You know, it had all mm-hmm. the same color shirts on, and just, man, you went out there, and it just seemed like the roof was about to blow off.
You remember the cardboard cutout of the guy had of me under the basket? In the jail,
Mr. Whammy. I remember that as Mr. Whammy.
Yeah, what's his name? The life size.
What's they call his name? Him Mr. Whammy. He always had the little rubber chicken.
Jack, we gotta find him.
You gotta find him. Yeah, I talked to him not too long ago. I talked to him not too long ago on DM in my DM.
That's dope. Hey, one person who kind of. I mean, obviously, you guys were loaded with yourself, Booze, Okor, a young Millsap, someone who I think kind of got overlooked, but I know how important he was. Talk to us about AK-47, because to me, he changed the whole dynamic. Jack and BD were both rolling in the first round, and AK was someone who slowed both of them down a little bit. But talk to me about his versatility and how much he meant for your guys' team.
Man, listen, if AK had a jumper, consistent jumper, I think he would have been the best player in the league at the time. Like, honestly. Because there's nobody that could fill up stats like him.
Yep.
Right. I mean, LeBron. LeBron. But, man, he was everywhere. Mm-hmm. Defensively and then offensively, he had a great feel for the game. He was a great passer, great understanding of where to be. And like you said, what he does on defense, I mean, he changes the game. You know, his help side defense is incredible. You know, he erased a lot of mistakes that we had because we didn't have the center shot blocker. You know, we had we had Mimmo and Boo, so neither one of them was really shot blockers. It was AK that would come and help. And at the time, you know, the three position was probably one that you could help off the most in that era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But BD did get him. That motherfucker was coming from the weak side blocking everything, but BD went on that baseline that one time and got him. What were you thinking during that dunk?
I'm so sick of seeing that shit, man. and even this year, that was the opening day. They had shirts. They had posters. This shit was 20 years ago. and then fast forward, Steph dunks and pulls up his shirt, like recreating it. So then it goes back viral. Then you got all these IGs, you got throwback hoops, you got way back hoops, you got pastime hoops.
Yeah.
They show it and then I feel bad because it's my damn fault. I had some terrible defense.
Oh, that's funny.
But yeah, I mean, if you're a shot blocker, you're gonna get got. It's just But it was bad, man. He smushed his nose when they showed the slow-mo. It's bad. That next year when we played y'all that first game, that's what was – they had posters cut out of that. And his smushed nose with BD's hand on it. I was like, damn, my fault. All I could do was say sorry.
The reason why it was so crazy, though, because BD had a bad knee. He had a bad back. He wasn't supposed to play that game.
Uh-huh.
All that was going on. He said he didn't have it. His back was hurting. His knee was hurting. He wasn't going to play all that. And he come out and do that. that's what really shocked us because we didn't know. I didn't know he had it in him, to be honest.
Yeah.
I did.
Right.
But I didn't know. He didn't tell me all that. I literally was with him before every game. I definitely didn't know he was hurt, but he ain't gonna say that to me because I'm a
possum. Yeah, you're gonna go at him and take advantage of it. So you guys were able to advance to the Western Finals, first time since '98, since the Stockton and Malone era. You face a tough San Antonio Spurs team. What was that experience like for you?
Man, it's a little bit like yours. I felt like we were cheated. I felt like Dick Bavetta got us in game three because we were down. We lost both games in San Antonio. And then had game three and it was a game four. I can't remember. No, I think it was game three because I think we went down 3-0, which, I mean, you can't really do against them. But it was a good learning experience, you know, and it was one of those where, like I said, the confidence starts to grow, I think, for us as a team as well. And we got to play against the champs, you know. They ended up winning. They ended up sweeping LeBron and the Cavs in the finals. And so, you know, we felt like we belonged. We felt like, honestly, I think we could have beat Cleveland if we would have got past San Antonio.
Old Dirty Dick Bavetta, huh?
Let's talk about your teammates, Boozer and Paul Millsap. They tried building like a Stockton Malone type connection with you and Boozer, you know. Talk about that team and how they came together and how it was like playing with guys like Millsap and Carlos Boozer.
Yeah, man. I mean, me and Booz definitely had a connection from the start, offensively. He was so good in the pick and roll. He's a very smart player. You know, obviously he went to Duke, so most of them dudes know how to play the game, you know, understand where to be on the floor. And, you know, he was a great finisher around the basket, could shoot that little 15, 17 foot pull up. And it was a hell of a screener, that's for sure. Big body. So, you know, he made my job easy. And then Paul Millsap, man, I watched him develop from a guy drafted 48th, who nobody even really, I didn't know who he was coming out. And just every year, you know, he just got better and improved. And, man, he's had a hell of a career. If you would have, I mean, he's still playing the game right now at a high level, you know. Yeah. Multi-time All-Star. You know, and it's fun seeing him still play and hopefully be able to get a ring.
Mm-hmm. What was your relationship like with Jerry Sloan? Obviously, we're on the outside, so we only hear the media perspective, and we know sometimes the media perspective is off, but it seemed like a little back and forth between you guys, and there was rumors that midseason he had stepped down because some situations happened with you guys. Clear the air with your and Jared Sloan situation. Obviously, rest in peace to Coach Sloan.
Yeah, man. Rest in peace, Coach Sloan. You know, I think our relationship was definitely strained at the end. I think I held on to that rookie year, you know, not starting and not, you know, the way he kind of, you know, what I talked about earlier about how, you know, he didn't really play me and would play me, you know, a couple minutes here, then all of a sudden I play. I think I took that personally for a while, you know, when I was younger and kind of held that grudge. And so I think that affected me a little bit. And I was definitely a little shit at times, a little prima donna. And so I knew how Coach Sloan was. And I think I kind of would poke the bear, you know, just to see his see his reactions too. It was kind of like a little back and forth thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, shit that I definitely wouldn't do now or, you know, knowing what I know now. But I always respected Coach Sloan. I learned a lot from him. You know, my best years were definitely in Utah. My best basketball, I definitely thrived in his system. And you know, I got a lot of love and respect for him as a coach and as a person.
Did you guys have any conversations after your career or just kind of once that situation in Utah kind of fell away, that's kind of what it was?
I ended up meeting with him about 2.5 years ago, maybe 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The owner, Greg Miller, old owner and GM got me to go out there and meet with Coach Sloan and kind of clear the air. And we were able to talk, but I'd always wanted to reach out. It was like one of those things where, like, I always knew I needed to reach out and apologize. And I feel like just kind of, I don't know if I was scared or just, you know, number one, Coach Sloan's intimidating. even as a grown man, it's like, you know, because I was with him when I was so young, it's like you always, you know, look at him differently. And but I was able to talk with him, you know, and this is after he was diagnosed, you know, with dementia. And so he was, you know, definitely regressing a little bit. And, mm-hmm. and you know, our conversations were kind of, they actually got heated a couple times. Well, he got heated a couple times. It's like almost like he was right back in the moment, you know, when I pissed him off. I was like, oh, shit. And, you know, Coach Sloan will fight you.
No question.
Coach Sloan will fight you. I seen him, I seen him try to go at Jerry Stackhouse before in the game. I'm like, Coach, I don't know if you want to do that right now.
I don't know if that's the one you want to choose.
Maybe that ain't the one.
But nope. Yeah, I was happy I was able to get a chance before he passed to talk with him and apologize for, you know, being a little shit.
Mm. Well, I think it's dope. I mean, obviously we've all had those moments in our career where in the moment it seems like everything. But then when we got either down the line or after we're done, like, damn, I definitely could have did this different. I definitely could have acted this way different. But to me, it's all about growth and maturity. But the only teacher is that experience. So in the moment, like you said, you held on to that shit from your rookie year because you knew what it was. But then at the beginning of the interview, you're just like, he was kind of testing my mental. But at the time, you weren't thinking about it. You're like, fuck this dude, man. What the fuck? I should be out here playing. So I think it's dope for, you know, in any situation, you know, sports, life, relationships, but to be able to kind of go back and kind of find where you could have did better, you know, or what I could have did different to kind of help the situation. I always think that's dope. February 23rd, 2011, you're traded to New Jersey for Devin Harris and Derek Favors, first round picks and some cash. How did you find out about it? And what was your thought process on leaving the place that you grew from a boy to a man in Utah?
Yeah, it was tough, man. That honestly, that shaped a lot of like the next years for me, just because it was right after the situation had happened with Coach Sloan. And so I was getting killed in the media and all that. And I was in the training room in Dallas in the hotel taping for Shoot Around. And we were watching SportsCenter because we were playing Dallas that night. I was on back home. You know, got like 25, had a whole suite and like 20 other tickets to the game. And all of a sudden it pops across the screen because Melo had just been traded to the Knicks. And then it was like breaking news, Deron Williams traded to the Nets. And this is the first time I'd even heard my name mentioned in a trade. And so I called my agent. I was like, hey, this just happened. Like, what's going on? He was like, I don't know. This is my first time hearing it. So he gets on the phone and then calls me back in like 5 minutes. He's like, yeah, you got traded. And so it was like, ooh, unexpected. I had my youngest my wife at the time was pregnant with my youngest. She was like 7 months pregnant when this happened. So I ended up having to pick up, go back, get my stuff from New York from Utah and head to New York. And it was a little bit of a shock, you know, because I'm going from a team who we made the playoffs in each of the 4 years, and I was going to a team who, you know, didn't really have a shot at making the playoffs. But, you know, just kind of took it as a challenge, is try to make them as good as possible.
So you go there, you go to a team that's not really doing anything. You sign a big extension your the next season there, if I'm not mistaken, right? You sign a 5-year, nearly $100 million deal.
Yeah.
2012. Yeah. You guys moved to Brooklyn. Jay-Z's in the mix. The win now mentality starts taking over. What was that transition like going to Brooklyn with this new energy? And like you said, at first you didn't have no hope, but then there's actually, you know, you feel that you see like there's some light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely had the win now mentality. And we're trying to do whatever they could to, you know, to put together a championship team. I think, you know, that was always his goal from the start when he took over the team, and kind of had an unlimited budget. And so, you know, you saw him spending money and doing different things. And, you know, it was definitely a different buzz when we moved to Brooklyn, you know, around the team. And, you know, Jay-Z was there, you know, a lot of games and opened up the arena, you know, with 7 straight concerts. It was just a lot of energy in the building, you know, something that we really didn't see in New Jersey. And it was fun.
There was rumors. Was it any truth to Dwight Howard possibly coming and joining you there?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I thought it was a done deal several times, you know. But I don't know why it didn't work out in the end. But it would have been, I think it would have been good for us.
Man, that would have been scary. That's before.
Yeah.
He ended up going to the Lakers shortly after that, right?
Yeah, I think he stayed like another year. And then was it the Lakers he went to first or Rockets?
Was it the Rockets first?
Lakers.
It might have somewhere. It wasn't the Nets.
No, it wasn't the Nets.
What was it like building chemistry and getting a chance to play with Joe Johnson, ISO Joe, and a young Brook Lopez?
Yeah, I mean, man, it was great. We had a lot of talent on that team. Joe was the first, like, two guard that I had ever played with that was, like, a ball, you know, ball dominant, great scorer. You know, most of the guys I played with in Utah were either shooters, complementary pieces, you know, defenders, you know, 3-and-D guys. And so this was my first time playing with a guy in the backcourt who was, you know, on the same level as me. And, you know, it was definitely fun playing with Joe. He made the game easy. Still getting buckets to this day, wherever he's at.
Right, right.
I mean, the dude was just so strong, so talented, had ice in his veins, you know, loved that to take the last shot. And then, you know, it was fun watching Brooke develop too, you know, and you know, he was young and, you know, a lot of, took a lot of stuff from the media for his lack of rebounding, but what he didn't do rebounding, he made up for in a lot of other things. And he was very talented, you know, back to the basket guy. And shoot, if he would have been shooting, I knew he could shoot threes back then, but he wasn't doing it because it wasn't the style of game yet, not like that, not like it is now. And same thing with Paul Millsap. When I played with him, he could shoot them, but he never did. Right. And but I was actually happy for Brooke when he got one this year.
Yeah, that's dope. So what's your mindset? 2013, you guys pick up KG and Paul Pierce. Obviously, the win now mentality. What were your initial thoughts hearing that you're getting, you know, two future Hall of Famers?
Man, I was excited, you know, and you know, it didn't work out. And that's what everybody looks at. But I easily feel like it could have worked out just the same. We just were hit with injuries, you know, Brooke. I ended up breaking his foot and was out most of the season. Paul had got hurt. I started out the season hurt. Injury just kind of hit us. KG is one of the toughest dudes I've ever been around, man. I mean, there was days where it's like he was dragging his knee, you know, around in practice. And they'd have to kick him off the court. You know, the trainers had to come out there and like physically remove him off the court because he didn't want to get off the court and would be mad. And so it's one of those things where we started out the season terrible. I mean, we were like the laughing stock of the league for a while and end up, you know, having a great second half of the season and then end up losing to a Miami team who obviously won the championship. But, you know, I feel like as much flack as we got for not being what we should have been, it could have, if the injuries didn't happen the way they did,
right?
You know, we could have been really...
That was you at the point, Joe at the two, Paul at the three, KG at the four, and Brooke at the five, right?
Yeah.
Oof, man.
Yeah.
You spoke to KG's toughness and mentality. He's a part of the Showtime family now. What were you remember anything in particular you might have learned from, even though it was a little bit later in your career, but to me, being around him, I'm always like a sponge. Anything you remember that you kind of learned from KG?
Man, it's just his work ethic. His work ethic. I've been around a lot of guys with crazy work ethics, and I put his, you know, up there with him, you know. Mm-hmm. And even though he was, you know, older at the time, you know, he was older than a lot of the guys who I'm talking about, the bronze of the world. But his work ethic was, you know, he was one of the first in, first, last to leave, you know, what you want from a leader.
You was waived by the Nets and they bought you out. What were you thinking after that?
It was kind of a mutual thing where I thought it was time for me to go. I felt like my time, you know, ran its course there. You know, I was dealing with injuries. I wasn't playing up to my contract, which was, you know, it's a hard pill to swallow, but it was true. And I just needed kind of a fresh start. You know, at that point I started really not loving the game, you know, just because, you know, it wasn't even like everybody thinks, oh, I couldn't handle New York. It wasn't that. It wasn't the media. It was more the pressure that I put on myself, you know, and had a lot going on in my home life that, you know, people don't know about or would never know about. And so it was just something where I just needed a change of scenery and ended up going to Dallas back home and kind of found that love for the game again.
touch on this because we had a chance to talk to Isaiah Thomas about this, and you briefly touched on it, but the mental of this game is out of this world. I coach my kids now, and I tell them, you know, shit, everybody could play. What's going to set you far to get you to that next level is that mental approach. So when your mental is still as strong as it's ever been, but then injuries start piling up, like, how tough is that to kind of deal with? Because like you said, it wasn't shit about the media. Everyone says the New York media is tough. If you could hoop, you could hoop. But when your mind is as sharp as it's ever been, but your body is still not there, how tough is that for an elite player like yourself?
Well, it's tough, man. For me, it's like, like you said, I had these injuries and it just kept happening. It was just like little nagging us. Like I never had the, you know, tear the ACL and have to come back. It was just always like I had the chronic ankle sprains and my ankles were swelling up the size of softballs at night. I could barely walk up the stairs. And then I would go to do a layup and it's like, I'm not even getting any lift on my layups. I can't get to spots where I'm normally, you know, used to getting to. And it's kind of like you get that self-doubt. Once that self-doubt creeps in, you know, it's something that I had never really had. I'd always been able to, all right, I had a bad game, I'm gonna shake it off. But these games, you know, started piling up and started messing with you. And then I remember when I was in New York when D Rose was going through his stuff and he, you know, thought about walking away from the game. And I had already had that thought, you know, several times where it's like, man, like my mental is so messed up that I was just like, is it even worth it anymore? I'll walk away right now. They can have the money. I don't care. And so, you know, that stuff kind of started setting in. And so when we came up with the resolution of the buyout, I was excited because yeah, I gave up some money, but I just needed a fresh start. I needed a different perspective.
So you land in Dallas. Talk to us. You're back home now. You said you find the love for the game again. What was it like being a Maverick?
It was great. You know, I enjoyed playing in Dallas. I enjoyed playing for Cubes and playing with Dirk. You know, Dirk is you know, he's a good one. He's a great one. Great dude. Good to play with. You know, all the guys, just a great group of guys there. And, you know, I started to fall in love with the game again, but at the same time, I still was getting these injuries, these nagging injuries, that kept me from, you know, being who I was.
February 27, 2017, you signed with the Cavs, got a chance to play with the King, LeBron James. What was that experience like?
It was great. I mean, I had played with LeBron in two Olympics. And so, you know, of course I knew him and knew what he brought to the table. And it was great, man. When I talk about work ethics, besides Kobe being around him in the Olympics, I mean, LeBron has the best work ethic that I've ever been around. And then his basketball mind is unbelievable. You know, I consider myself, you know, a pretty smart human when it comes to the game of basketball and seeing things and understanding things, but his mind works differently. And I've seen people talk here. I've heard people talk about it, seen people talk about it on TV, but until you are actually, you know, there with him day in and day out, going over game plans, seeing him call out all the team's plays, you know, it's just on another level, the way he's prepared, how he prepares himself. And, it's what makes him so good. Not only the physical gifts he has, but, you know, his mental approach to the game as well.
Have you ever, I'm sure you have, but would have been like you in your prime getting a chance to play with that team and what kind of fucking trouble you guys would have caused?
For sure. I mean, it definitely did. And it was, that was a tough situation for me. Cause I came in February, you know, over halfway through the season. And of course, Kyrie's there. And so, you know, my minutes were very limited and I'm in a role that I had never played before. You know, I'm used to having the ball in my hands. I'm used to making things happen. And there I was, you know, I was either running, you know, pick and roll every now and then, or I was, you know, spotting up in the corner. And I didn't have the greatest, you know, impact, especially in the finals. I had a, you know, pretty shitty finals. But even that, I wish, not even being in my prime, just wishing I had a whole season to play that role, to learn how to flourish in that role, you know, to get confident with just, you know, being able to come in and knock down shots, you know. You know, you guys know it. Those, you know, Matt, you came off the bench a lot.
Yeah.
It's tough to sit over there for 25 minutes and then come in the game and you got to hit, you know, a shot when it's thrown to you, or you might not get another shot.
And that's what it depends on, you know what I mean? So to me, like you said, it was easy for me, you know, starting and then going to the bench, but knowing that, you know, kind of my job was to do that. But you're like, again, you're someone who's had the ball in his hands his whole career, making plays and then being able to get your own when you want. So when you're coming into a situation like that with two superstars already, great team, you know what I mean? It's just like, damn. At the end of that season, you guys lose to Golden State. Did you know right then it was time?
No, I think I was a little discouraged just because of the role I had. And again, I had a lot going on in my personal life that I just felt like between all the injuries, I felt like I was at the point where I couldn't make it through a season without getting hurt. And I didn't know mentally if I could take that anymore, you know, just the impact it had on me. And so I feel like me stepping away from the game was more, you know, mentally for me than anything, just because of the place I was at mentally. And I felt like it was the best thing to do.
Yep, I hear that.
Member of the USA 2008 Olympics, went unbeaten on the way to winning back to the gold medal after defeating Spain and living up to their redeemed team. What was that experience like?
It was incredible, you know. I think I was only like 24 at the time. So, you know, for me to be able to be on that team, with guys who I grew up watching, like Jason Kidd, and, you know, team up with LeBron and Melo, and CP and D-Wade and those guys, was unbelievable. You know, we had a lot of expectations, because it was, you know, it had been a while since the, you know, USA had took gold home. And so there was a lot of pressure on us, but at the same time, we felt like we had the best team, you know, hands down. And, put a lot of pressure on ourselves, and Coach K did a great job of coaching us. But that experience is probably my, I mean, both gold medals were meant a lot to me, but that first one, getting that first one and being the redeemed team, I think that meant a lot and was definitely my best moment as a basketball player.
What's the backstory on the viral video that came out, you and Boshnam eating hamburgers at the gas station?
I don't even remember, honestly. I don't know who took the video. Probably D-Wade, because he always had a camera on him. He stayed with the video camera the whole trip. And I heard he has maybe a documentary coming out from that trip. So hopefully that comes out. But it was just, we stopped at like a gas station somewhere to get food. We were on a little road trip and got food, and all of a sudden that video keeps popping up circulating every couple months.
Mm-hmm. So you guys ran it back in 2012. Obviously the games are fun. You guys, there's a lot of pressure, but what is it like on your downtime? I'm sure that's the time where it's fun, it's jokes, it's shit talking, it's reminiscing. Any dope stories off the court from those teams, either 08 or 2012?
Honestly, like the most fun thing about, you know, all these trips are the stuff we did, you know, off the court. You know, we had great meals. We had great card games for a little bit of cash.
A little bit of cash.
little Blu-ray, little guts. Man, I remember going through Spain. We were in Barcelona before the London Olympics. It was like me, James, Katie, and somebody else. And we were riding Segways just through Barcelona. Just all on down the boardwalk on the beach. You know, just things like that, man. Just kicking it off the court, you know, is some of the best moments I have from both of those experiences.
How challenging were those practices when you guys had your inner squads?
They were unbelievable. I mean, you got 15 of the most competitive dudes in the world. Well, 12, I guess. We only had 12 people, but 12 of the most competitive dudes in the world, you know, on one court. So, of course, you know, being led by Kobe and LeBron, you know, those practices are going to be intense. You know how Coach K is. You've heard how Coach K is as a coach. And so, man, the practices were amazing. The shooting games after practice were competitive. I mean, there wasn't nothing we didn't compete in when we were when we were together. I mean, that's just facts.
Mm-hmm. So transitioning to post-career, managing multiple businesses, but one thing I thought was dope that you own an MMA gym. I'm a huge MMA fan. You own a gym. You do some sparring yourself. Obviously, you had an early love with wrestling for your mom, but where did your love for MMA come from?
Well, that's kind of it. I mean, I feel like, I mean, I've been a fan of MMA for forever, you know, and I think I kind of gravitated towards it because of my wrestling background and, you know, how big of a part that plays in MMA. And so I've always been a fan, and I've been training for, you know, about eight, 9 years. Mm. It was always a good, great way to stay in shape. And once I stopped playing basketball, I picked up my training. You know, I was training probably, you know, 4 or 5 times a week for a while, but just kept getting hurt. same as the basketball court. But I gotta tell myself I'm not 23 anymore.
Right.
But I just love the sport. I love watching it. I love participating in it. And then, you know, we have a bunch of men and women at our gym that are fighting in the UFC. And so I enjoy supporting them.
That's what's up. Thoughts on kind of the current landscape and how boxing and MMA are kind of colliding now for these, whether you want to call them influencer fights or whatever you want to call them. But, you know, the T. Woodleys, the Nate Robinson, the Jake Paul way, the Logan Paul way. What are your thoughts on kind of MMA intersecting with boxing?
You know, it's interesting, you know, because there's a lot of back and forth going on between, you know, boxers and mixed martial artists. And for the most part, you know, a boxer is going to win a boxing match against an MMA guy. You know, it's just facts. But at the same time, if you put a boxer in an MMA cage, they're not going to survive. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I think it's interesting to see where it goes. I think it's just the beginning of it. And now you have, like you said, you have these celebrity, you know, boxing matches and things of that nature that are catching on. And you know, as goofy as you might think they are, as stupid as you might think they are, people tune in, people watch it. I know I watch it.
I do.
I certainly watch it. I would love to do one. Y'all find me opponent.
Oh shit! You heard it here.
They're fun, man. I think it all brings notoriety to the sports, you know, and brings attention to it and brings press, and like you guys know, all press is good press. Mm-hmm. Tell us not.
Right.
So what's the biggest difference between today's game and when you were in your prime, you feel?
I would have loved to play in today's game, like in my prime.
Can't touch you, wide open court.
Man, I mean, but just it's the confidence. You know, I've talked about it before. Like, I played for an old school coach. Coach Sloan hated early shots. And I could get away with more than most people, I think, on my team for sure, where I could come down and if I saw an early three, I could take it. But if I miss, you know, two of them in a row, he wasn't going to be happy. And now today, like, those are all good shots. And these guys just have the utmost confidence to do anything out there. And so when you have that confidence that you can take, no matter what shot you shoot, you know, it's a good shot. That opens up a whole new can of worms.
Mm, I hear that. Who are some of the point guards and players, you know, outside of LeBron's that you enjoy following these days?
I mean, shit, everybody. I still love watching Steph, Dame. I like that young kid, Ja Morant. I think he's going to be special. I think he's going to be, you know, really special. LaMelo, I think he's going to be good. But it's, I mean, it's the same as when I was in the league. I mean, the point guard position, you go around the league, there's not a point guard where you're like, oh, he's maybe one or two where you're like, oh, they shouldn't be starting or they're not a starting point guard. For the most part, everybody's a dog.
Yeah.
Everybody's a dog.
Anybody out there you see yourself to see that you reminds of a young D Will?
Everybody says Fred Van Fleet.
Y'all just look alike.
He ain't big enough. He ain't tall enough.
Big enough, tall enough.
You know, I feel like it's shifted. I mean, that's the biggest thing is the prototypical point guard when I was, you know, that big point guard is kind of gone away. You know, it's more about, you know, being quicker, more athletic. You know, there's not the post-up game isn't as prevalent as it was when I was playing. And so it's just a different game. It's a different game.
Yeah. We're going to put you on the spot right here. Still, we're still obviously haven't even started. Training camp is around the corner if it hasn't started already. Your East and your West picks saying that all teams stay healthy, which probably won't happen. But if everyone stays healthy, who do you got coming out of the East and who you got coming out the West?
That's a no-brainer. That's a the Lakers and the Nets.
Right. And who do you like at it? Like if it goes down seven games, who you got?
If they're all healthy.
Yep. It's tough.
That's tough.
It's the OGs so against the next in lines.
I feel like I can't. I could. It's like betting against Brady. You can't bet against Brady, and I can't bet against LeBron.
Very true.
Even though it's tough, because you get a healthy KD, and man, they're loaded. Healthy KD, healthy Kyrie, healthy James. Offensively, they're better. Offensively, better, but I think defensively, and I know how LeBron locks in. I'm going Lakers because he locks in when it's in the playoffs. Who y'all got?
I'm right there with you. You mean to me? Obviously health is going to be important. It's very hard to go against LeBron, but then again, it's very hard to go against a healthy Brooklyn Nets team. And if Kyrie is locked in and James is hitting on all cylinders, man, like that's the best offensive trio I think we've ever seen in the history of basketball,
hands down.
So,
and what's the scariest thing about all both these teams now is none of these teams are coming together mid-season. They're getting training camp together. So it's going to be scary to see how these teams come out from the jump.
If you had to choose one dark horse, who would you have?
I'm going to say the Warriors.
Ooh, I'm not mad at that. I'm not mad
just
at that
because,
at all.
I mean, if Klay's healthy, if Steph is, I mean, you see what he was doing towards the end of last year. You can't forget about them.
They're going to make a trade. Watch. They're going to make a trade, too.
Yeah, that's another thing.
I was just going to think they'll make a mid-season or a trade deadline move, too, to put them right in position.
Who's going? Wiggins?
Wiggins.
Who knows? It depends on what you get back. I mean, they got a lot of pieces, too, good young pieces, which is going to help them if they really make a move. But been a dope-ass interview. We're down to quick hitters, man. First thing that comes to your mind, spit it out. Toughest player matchup in your career? I wouldn't even say toughest, maybe favorite.
It was early in my career with Sam Cassell.
Ooh. People don't know how cold Sam was, man.
Man, they don't. I used to have so many problems with him in the post. He was so crafty.
Yep. Even though you were bigger and stronger, he still got that work in the post.
And would talk to you the whole time.
Old school. Young fella. Top 5 point guards of all time.
Ooh.
Oh, Jesus. Wow. Magic. Oscar Robertson.
Okay.
John Stockton.
Okay. Oh, geez.
Dang, this is tough.
I'm gonna say
Steph.
Put you on the spot. It's all the smoke, baby.
There's one, it's like I can't even think right now. I don't like this. this is stuff y'all supposed to tell before the show.
It's not J-Kid?
Yes, J-Kid. We put J-Kid. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, gotta go J-Kid.
I'm like, why can't I think right now?
It's gotta be J-Kid.
Favorite album of all time. No skips. You can listen from front to back.
All Eyes on Me.
Ooh.
Nice. Classic.
I'm a fan of that.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. If you could sit courtside to any game in history, what game would it be?
Ooh. I'm going to say the finals game where Ray hit that three in the corner.
Oh, in Miami.
In Miami against the Spurs. Because that's the only thing I can think of right now.
Yeah. All right, next up. You plus four of your current teammates throughout your career, plus a sixth man to build a super team. Who would you pick from your career that you've played with?
And the sixth these man? Are these are prime.
Yeah, yeah, they're all in their prime, and you're the point guard.
Well, that damn. I'm gonna say me, Joe, KG, mm-hmm. Paul.
You're forgetting
Dirk.
One.
Dirk.
That's five. You're forgetting one.
And Booze.
You left Bron off.
Oh shit! I forgot. Yeah, Bron's on there. I only played with him for like 5 months. That's why I ain't thinking. I'm thinking.
Now you feeling guys you like really went in with? I feel that.
Yeah, with like who I was like playing with.
Yeah,
but Bron is definitely there. And then can I get seven? Because I'm gonna put Kyrie on there too.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So you, KG, Paul Pierce, Joe, Dirk, LeBron, and Kyrie. Oof, that's a hell of a team. Yeah.
That's a mob.
Hell of a team. Last question.
And your answer to this question, just remember, mm-hmm. you have to help us with your answer. Who do you want to see on All the Smoke?
Oh. What MMA guys have y'all had on?
We only had none. We only had one.
Who?
Woodley, T. Woodley.
Oh, T. Yeah. Woodley?
Mm-hmm.
Shit, Connor would be fun.
Connor would be dope.
Connor would be awesome.
So it's crazy.
I don't know if I can help you out with that one.
No, so it's crazy. Hey, so I've been working. So my motherfucking college roommate who played football at UCLA, shout out Adia Torres, his manager. So I've been on this motherfucker like, man, let's get it. But it's always kind of around his fights. And then, you know, he's kind of been on a downwards. It's just, I don't know if it's good. But I've been working on Connor for a minute, man. So hopefully we're able to get him.
Yeah, but y'all bring it full circle. So it's like, you know.
It's more about life, you touch everything.
So it's like,
For sure. All right, man. Well, D, we appreciate your time. Great catching up with you. Was a big fan of while you played, man, and glad you took some time to join us. Best of luck with the fam, business. That's a wrap. All the Smoke, season 3, man. We're here. You can catch this on Showtime Basketball YouTube and the iHeart platform Black Effects. We'll see y'all next week.
Peace. Appreciate you, D.
Appreciate you, bro.